This is the House of Hockey podcast,
where we talk about the game and the lifestyle.
We've got opinions as hockey fans, friends, and from the female perspective.
Welcome to our house.
Welcome to the House of Hockey podcast, episode 173. I have a very special guest here, and Breezy, my co-host, she is still on our proverbial injured reserve. No expected timeline yet of when she will return, but I will be sure to update you as I get that news from Breezy. But I am joined by Alan Creda. We actually met when I was in New York at the Rangers game watching warmups. He is a longtime writer who's covered the three major NHL teams in New York. That includes Rangers, Islanders, Devils. He spent almost two decades writing with the Associated Press. He's covered money banking, of course, the NHL, and the sports media business. He's still doing all of that today. He's an author. We're going to hear about his hockey book, but he was at the Stadium Series 2024 in the Meadowlands with this crazy back-to-back weekend.
It was unbelievable. Right? Surreal, stunning, every adjective you can come up with, out of body, the wind, the light, the colors, the almost 80,000 people yesterday, 70,000 on Saturday night, four teams, 2 days. Insane. Hockey has no limit to the outdoor festival ability to draw people in and be together outside, tailgate, party pregame, party intra-game, party post-game, buy $300 jerseys and socks and hats and everything that goes with it. It is no limit. It's remarkable what this has become, and I feel like you could have the same teams play in the same places every year, every other year, and it'd be just as successful. It's unbelievable. Like you go into it thinking, oh, it can't match the last time I did one of these. And I think this weekend exceeded it just in sheer numbers. This was the fourth and fifth times there were outdoor games in the New York area. Two were at Yankee Stadium, 2014, back-to-back. Rangers-Devils, Rangers-Islanders then at night. And then there was Rangers-Sabres at Citi Field. So those were different baseball stadium dynamic, the shape. Yeah. And the sun was out yesterday. It was just, it was wild. I don't know how to really phrase it.
I think you can't quite believe
there are that many people in one place watching this game. And you know, they're all diehards. These aren't just lately fans. These are real lunatics that really enjoy it, and that's how it should be from both sides. People will drive anywhere for anything to do this and be part of it. Maybe they'll go to one other game a year, but they went to this one yesterday, and even for the island to Jersey is not exactly an easy drive, but
no,
thousands of people made it. So it was wild. And then of course to have the game it was yesterday, surreal.
Yesterday was
on a whole other level. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the Rangers Islanders game. Well, unreal game.
It was so bright that they delayed the game yesterday. And that added some more lead up time, anticipation time, watching the sun move across the ice. Like these are problems in situations you never have indoors, obviously. So it added just a sort of ethereal quality to the experience. You know, how windy is it going to be? Can the goalies see? You know, what about when the light gets flatter and it's a different grayer sort of pre-twilight light, then they turn the lights on. So yeah. And of course, you know, they come out for warmups and those jerseys, their Islanders are in these blue and orange, first time anyone's seeing them en masse. Unbelievable burst of color, and the Rangers in these bright white with NYR. Like it was, somebody did their homework on how the colors would show up in that situation. Same the night before, Flyers in pretty standard looking, but white, what would have been years ago traditional home white, and the Devils in these sort of black and red, almost fluorescent. Yeah, wild stuff. And then, you know, just to see the game proceed with the colors, with the loudness, you almost forget it's just another ordinary, basically regular season game. So,
Yeah, I think you're capturing it perfectly. I think this is how everybody who was at either of those games
right.
or just watched on TV, these are all the thoughts and feelings us as fans go through, right? Like you're just like seeing ever, it's such an immersive experience, these outdoor games. And I know I haven't been to one yet, and people are trying to convince me to go watch my team Chicago next year at Wrigley, but that's a later discussion for another time. But I am still I just think the way you're describing it is exactly how everybody feels. And you've touched on a couple of things that I wanted to get your thoughts on, just as far as what you just said, how it was still a regular season game. I found it really interesting that the league lets all the other teams play concurrently while the Stadium Series game is happening. I know they don't do that for the Winter Classic, but I feel like that's a move that isn't ideal, and you could really get a lot more bang for your buck as far as like advertising and business goes by not having these other games going on and getting the fans and like forcing them to watch these other teams play in these stadium series. What is the logic behind that? Do you
It's a good
know?
question. I think they've commandeered New Year's Day perfectly because they've won the day now. There was since college football moved to bowl games all over the place, and somehow the NHL figured out a way to try that game, have it work in 2008 and on. So that day is owned by the Winter Classic, and I think these add-ons, I don't think they realize how successful they might be or would be. Then they came a little later, and I think they would probably like. There was minimal games yesterday. There were only two. One, of course, was Jaromir Jagr's retirement.
Right.
I think they love that they can do it on a holiday weekend, obviously.
Right.
And this was only the third time the league had done two games in one place, and I think this exceeded expectations. The last time was at Lake Tahoe with no fans, but a spectacular backdrop. So that proved they can do it somewhere just for the visuals. And I believe that was a sort of a lone day event. And the previous one was Yankee Stadium 2014. And they split the days. It was an afternoon game, Rangers Devils, and then a night game 2 nights later, Rangers Islanders. So
Right.
it's a little on the fly. I think it's hard. The schedule's tough enough. They probably are trying to figure out ways to minimize the other games. I don't. But yeah, I mean, yesterday was so immersive. You feel like this can't. Who else would watch anything else on
Yeah.
this day? It both games. I mean, an ESPN bringing the national TV entity to it, that adds another layer or three, so they can really have the nation watching. So I mean, they can't do enough of these for what I have seen. You would think it would hit a mark of limits, and yet, no matter what market they go to, they're in Raleigh, they're in Denver, they're in Dallas, they're in L.A. in the sunshine, even. Like, I don't think they can put ice down anywhere within reason and have 50,000, 80,000 people. And it worked. And the ice technology is so unbelievable now that they could do this with enough lead time. And even if it's a one-use ice, this just there's something about outside, of course, and every player can talk about an experience early in their lives where they played outside with their families, their brothers and sisters, parents, everyone played outside in a pond somewhere in the world. So
And same
it's
for the
totally uniting.
fans, which I think a lot of the fans have played or love to play, or there's a lot of people out there like me who can't play for their life and skate. So I think it really connects across. Do you think how successful and how much money do these outdoor games? I know all of the ones we do, right? The Heritage Classic, we do the Stadium Series, we do the Winter Classic. You've got these specialty games you're talking about. That doesn't necessarily benefit the league, the charity game, but this has been a huge contribution to the business of the league. Tell us a little bit more about that element and why these are so important for the business of hockey and to help keep this sport growing financially.
I think it just helps broaden the appeal. It maybe fans that haven't been to a game, been familiar with following it as we do day by day by day. And you like, oh, outdoor game, we all go as a group or watch. It's quirky. It's not every day. And it might hook you in to suddenly saying, wow, what a game. I need to go to live games. I need to watch. So the league has been good about drawing in new fans. I think they're very attuned to how to reach people. It's obviously a very young demographic too, with social media and all that goes with it. It's actually unbelievable how much staff there is for the league, for the teams, from the network. There's so many posts about so much that they just, it's just an avalanche of information, visuals, images, stuff beyond the game. I mean, the mascots were there. Saturday night, Gritty was fighting with the devil mascot. They were throwing snowballs at a Ranger fan. You know, they just get funny
Gritty
stuff,
went
innocent enough.
streaking. I
Gritty
mean,
went
come on.
nuts. Yeah, Gritty is out of his mind. So Gritty is brilliantly choreographed in every way. He was in with the fans. He was, I think he made friends with the devil. So that's interesting going forward. I think they united against the Rangers or something. And I mean,
There's a
yesterday
whole
they were
storyline with just the mascots, Alan. We've got
right.
storylines and
Oh,
content with just mascots, let
it's
alone what's happening on the ice and off the ice.
Of course, the Jonas Brothers played before the game on Saturday night, so that was a true Jersey moment. I mean, the players coming in with these crazy get-ups before the game too. The Flyers dressed up as Rocky in the sweatsuits. The Devils came in as Sopranos characters. I mean, it's endless.
Love that.
So
I
many
love
thinking
that.
of ideas, and that brings it gets attention. It might again get the casual fan. The dedicated fans are part of it too. So it's just an all inclusive. I don't think any other sport has invented something so dynamic that people look forward to, will travel to, will spend a lot of money to be at all costs. And you could move it and you're going to get the same reaction next year in Columbus, Ohio, when they
That's gonna
bring in
be
100,000 fans for that game. Columbus
that's
is hosting Detroit in
yep
the next year's.
in the Ohio State at the Ohio Stadium. That's gonna be a cold experience, but could not be cooler to have in Ohio. Especially the Ohio State is the biggest thing you can get of sports in Ohio, beyond any of the football teams that are in the NFL. Like, that is going to be quite the experience. And I hear what you're saying about a lot of this is to try to bring in the casual fan and hook them in as longtime fans and get them rallying behind their local NHL team and showcasing it. And of course they do that, especially during the coverage of the game, like with ESPN, they had all the football guys on there yesterday, for the respective New York teams, you know, doing short little interviews, talking to them about why they love hockey and, you know, trying to get some of those fans from the NFL in and bring all of this in. I mean, so
It's
much
smart.
happened. And then
It's
back to your point about the walk-in outfits. I was waiting for that post on social media because I wanted to see what they were going to do. They were asked about it the day or, you know, 2 days before or whatever, when they get to warm up on the ice.
Right.
And, you know, it's fun to guess and try to see. And I think one of the things that they really capitalize on in the NHL is that the players have these personalities. Like, this is instinctual, I think, to majority of the players. They love Halloween. We know this as fans. We see all their posts of Halloween. They go all out with the costumes. They love a moment to have some fun. And I think getting to see them embrace this kind of thing is the content that the fans crave. Like, we don't get enough of their personality. And this is the one thing we can get. You know, here and there we get little pieces, and I think that's great. But on the flip side of what Philly and New Jersey did for their walk-in outfits, you have the Rangers who wore the NYFD and NYPD and Long Island police, whatever, all the police and all the fire teams, jerseys, and they rode in on fire trucks and in police cars, and they really honored that part of New York, which is such a core value of New York today, especially. But the other side of it with the Islanders, how Lou was like, there's no costumes. You're wearing your damn suit. Don't you dare stray from what we do. That is not allowed. You better shave your face. Like,
Yeah.
I thought it was perfect. It was the mix.
It actually was.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like one team was as they are. Like, that's how the players always come in the sharp dressed, clean suit. So that was their, it worked because he didn't have to have something outlandish. That was perfect casting, as it were. And they also had a police escort, so to speak. So they were part of the dynamic of law enforcement, fire. I mean, that's such a part of the ethos of the New York team, or any team, really, anywhere in any community. But that worked. Especially, I mean, the Rangers, of course, so close to the Stephen McDonald family, the award every year they give this award for the perseverance, dedication, dedicated to police officer who was shot in the line of duty, who became a rallying cry for the team back in the late 80s. And this continues to this day. I've written about the family. And I actually saw a post last night that Stephen McDonald, who passed in 2017, his wife and son, who's now a high ranking police official, did the opening lineups, did the roll call for the Rangers in the room. They posted that. Again, Mark Messier and Mike Keenan were part of it. So these are also elements you wouldn't see years ago, like this insider bit of how, what goes on in those 10 minutes before the game, you know, cameras everywhere, national TV partners. It's neat. I mean, fans don't always know. It's nice to bring everyone under the tent for a bit. Trade secrets aren't released, and people feel like they're right in there with them, and why not? But so that was a very human moment yesterday. And it was one I didn't realize myself until later when you start looking through the posts. And that's probably another reason why these situations work so well, is the sort of string attached to what else happened, what can I find, who else can I read about, or what they said, or what their vantage point was. And it's being outside again, you're like, anything can be happening, and you don't realize it. And there's so many people and so many angles to be watching the game from, and who else there? Alumni was there from both sides. Have Rangers and Islanders legends sharing the stage a bit. Denny Potvin, John Tinelli, Brian Trache, Messier, Adam Graves, Henrik Lundqvist. You know, everything's a chance for another generation to react. Mike Richter, cup-winning goalie. So everyone had a moment within the context of this game. Which is a game for the ages on top of everything else. You had this insane Ranger-Islander rivalry game, which will be, in 20 years, people will be talking about this one just like we're talking about it today. It had that quality of, wow, I can't believe I saw what I just saw. Following a great game the other night, the Flyers-Devils played a tremendous game themselves, and the home team won it. So that made New Jerseyans happy. I think that crowd was more... It was heavily Devils. It was a lot more red than orange. So that kind of made sense. They got an official home game in their state. And the Devils are always fighting for the limelight, three cups. And yet they were always having to fight for it. So that was nice to see. It's cool to have three teams in one metropolitan area.
Yeah. And I mean, Philly kind of sort of counts. Not really. I mean, you could drive to Philly as quick as you could drive from Jersey City over to Long Island.
Right.
You know, it takes the same amount of time. It's less distance. Right. I know people in New York are screaming right now because they're like, Philly is not part of the greater New York area. And it's not. But, you know, it felt like it was the right matchup for this.
They practice in South Jersey. There's a Jersey element to their fan base for sure. The rivalry is, of course, more Rangers, Flyers, Islanders, Flyers, but Devils, Flyers, you know, one. If there's a playoff series between any two teams, it creates something that maybe wasn't there, which is part of why I've been hoping one day, of course, Rangers, Islanders is what every local fan wants to see again. It's been 30 years, but Rangers, Flyers is epic, obviously, way back, 70s and 80s. And Islanders, Devils is one that needs some more footing to cross the Islander, the Long Island, New Jersey barrier would add something. So there's only happened once, 1988. So I feel like the games we saw this weekend could crisscross. They could match up Rangers, Devils, Flyers, Islanders. But you can mix and you can do this one every year.
I'm sure
they're thinking about a repeat.
What was your interaction with the fans at both of these back-to-back games? What was sort of the response or general consensus from people at the game?
They seemed thrilled. I mean, it gives it the fan bases the chance to tailgate, especially yesterday in the sunshine ahead of it. I don't personally know how anyone could sit out there for 3 hours in third-degree wind. I admire it, but I can't repeat that. It's hard. I don't know how. You have to be a professional to have the layers and have the wherewithal to deal with the elements.
So they
all seem thrilled. I mean, the Islander fan base in particular, they're excellent tailgaters from all the years at Nassau Coliseum.
Oh yeah.
So that this was an easy one, and I know a lot of hockey fans are football fans, so they've done this obviously before. Jets, Giants, Eagles. If the same fans are hockey fans, this is a chance to just do it in different colors and in a different month of the year. And we got there early yesterday. The game was supposed to start at 3. I got there before noon, and there were hundreds and hundreds of tailgating setups for both teams. So that's 3-4 hours out in the cold, 3-4 more hours inside.
Right.
Sun is setting, but I can't imagine anyone didn't have a good day. You see the endless, endless thousands of posts from fans with their kids, families, groups of fans making it their maybe one day party a year. I mean, if you're going to pick one game, pick this one. So it seems like the amount of money you have to spend, it doesn't matter. The experience is totally worth it, and it's unique, and the league has figured out how to monetize this so well, and it's for a good cause. I think fans get along, and I don't sense much hate, quote hate. Of course, you want your team to win, but it wasn't violence in the stands. There, people were getting along. From what it was a cool kind of cohesive co-experience, win or lose. I mean, the Islander fans, it was a crushing loss yesterday.
The way they held the lead, and it felt like, I thought, oh my God, they're going to win. I was like, the Islanders are going to win this game? I went into it thinking there's no way they're going to come out on top of this game. And then I keep watching, and then all the chaos that we saw that happened, I mean, in the first minute and a half of the game, not just like it was complete fire between those two teams, and it's a rivalry that's really fun to see, and they really go up against each other really tough when they get to play each other like this. And I think it's wonderful to see this sort of that passion and rivalry and angst that I don't know that we see as much anymore in the league. But when the game ended, of course, in overtime and the win, it was just crazy the way it all played out. And I mean, you can't ask for a better experience than this. And to what you're saying, it's like, is there anything they can do to improve on these outdoor games? I think the only thing I got from my conversations was the merchandise challenges. The Devils were sold out of almost everything before the game even started. And I think there's not as much available on site. And I think that's an element the fans are really craving, and more diversity of the kind of stuff that they're selling, I think, is something that fans like. But other than that, I don't know, from your perspective, what would be something you would want to see them improve on, if there even is anything?
I think it's just capitalizing on the experience. I mean, I felt like there needed to be a little more after the two games, like, wow, that was amazing, but I can't believe it's over feeling. But there's probably a fine line between underdoing it and overdoing it. And I know the merchandise, there was some complaints that it was available, but not available soon enough. And it came out sort of too close to the game. But the Islanders in their arena had tons of the stuff weeks ahead of time. The Rangers, as much as they could fit in their team stores, I saw it appear. So, the merchandising, I think there's limits, though, to how much crowd they can move crowd around, in a football stadium team store set up or stands, and I feel like people sort of wear their stuff to the game. So they do want it in advance versus I'm going to go to the game and buy a jersey now kind of thing. So I guess the more lead time, I mean, I know they make it wait for dramatic purposes on what colors, how the jerseys will look. I'm amazed that people will buy, fans will buy yet another jersey to go with the 12 they already have. Because you look back 30 years ago when the Islanders, for example, winning the Stanley Cup, you just didn't see fans in jerseys in the arena like you do today. It's somewhere along the way the paradigm changed and it
Where did it
became the
flip?
only
What
late night.
was it just
I
like
don't know.
marketing and the teams just brought the like Adidas version, like the less expensive, authentic version, so it was more affordable, or just like that
I think
probably influenced the
it's a great
availability.
question. Like where it actually, I would think sort of late 90s is probably commensurate with the internet and posting and teams doing special events in the playoffs, like the Winnipeg Jets with their whiteouts. So everyone wear white, like come as a uniformed group. And then, you know, you see, I think maybe also when they came back from the lockout, the season lost lockout of 04-05. They had to try a lot of new stuff. Shootout starts. Teams are wearing, you know, officially wearing dark at home and the third jersey. So it just became, this is what I'm going to wear to match my home team's look. And it just sort of caught on. So every team at home, you see basically a majority of the dark jerseys. And I mean, I grew up watching hockey when it was white at home, so I'm still a little backwards on the blue Ranger Islander, you know, you kind of, I wanted to see the whites like I
There you
remember as
go.
a kid. So, but yeah, in those days, you did not see, people did not spend that kind of money on wearing a jersey, and there weren't the marketing abilities to order things online. You had to go to a physical store to buy it, and it was a big deal in high school in the 80s to buy a jersey, but you had to go, you had to work for it. You couldn't order it on NHL.com. So that part is added to, I have to look my part for my
Just
team,
ignore the
and
barking happening
that's
in my
okay.
house.
No
It's
problem.
they came to fill the
Part of it.
oil, and so they're, all the things are
My dog
happening.
is somewhere. She listens to me when I'm on Zoom, so she's
I love
behind
it.
me. Yeah, funny.
Talk to me a little bit. I know you cover a lot of Islanders, and we had a huge change coaching. The legendary Patrick Waugh is now there. What has been your assessment thus far of, being in post game and pregame, chats with him and listening to him talk and hearing from the players? What's your assessment of his new role?
High energy, brilliant, has seen it all, been part of it all. He is not shy. He goes into detail. He's a tremendous interview. He is fiery and super motivated to prove that he could do this again in a new era. So it's been refreshing. I love any of these guys that I saw play in the 80s who are now in the sort of erudite coaching side of it where they have to explain. And you know they're speaking from experience, and he's had such an amazing, colorful career of his own that it's been a refreshing bonus to what was sort of an okay season. Lane Lambert was a perfectly good guy, but didn't say a lot. I think the players went as far as they can go with his system and style. Patrick Waugh may take more time than just this part of season left to really incorporate his methodology and view. But it's been an interesting start. I don't know how they're 3-3-3 with him, so it's not the burst I think they were hoping for, but it'll get better from here. I think he'll bring in more of his type of players. Pretty sure he'll bring in another assistant coach or two. He's still learning. It's hard to come in on the fly in any situation, let alone a team with so many players who've been there for as long as a lot of Islanders have. So it was a gamble, but they're going to try to squeak into one of those last two spots. I mean, he was upbeat yesterday somehow after they squander that point, essentially. But that's a 2-point game they let slip to one. That's not I earned a point at the end kind of day. And the Islanders have lost 14 games in extra time. So if they had won half of those, they'd be up where the Flyers are. So this has to
Yeah, they've
eat
got
at
to do
them.
some work on their penalty kill. It was,
It's
you could see
tough.
it
I mean,
struggling in their big time. So
I don't think I've ever seen that I could remember two pulled goalie, extra man, power play goals scored in the last 5 minutes. You see one, that's something. You see two, that's unbelievable. Yeah. And
kills then, of course, you as an Islander fan if you are.
The overtime was just crazy, 10 seconds. I mean, the overtime has become more of a choreography event than an actual too much planning. But that was just
luck.
It happened. It was a bounce. Yeah. It's on a stick. It's in the net. Was it a goal? Wasn't a goal. I mean, the big goal was the tying goal by Mika Zibanejad in the last 2 minutes. That crowd went bonkers yet again. It was the same as a last, you know, punt return touchdown on that field with everybody bouncing in the, you see blue and red and white bouncing and screaming and shocked and amazed. And the wackiest part of watching the game from the recessed football stadium press box behind glass, so the sound's a little different. There's almost a delayed reaction. You see it and then hear it. It's a funny, and we're hearing the game on broadcast in a delay, so you're hearing it in delay, you're watching it in real time, and then you're hearing and seeing the reactions, like a bit of a delay, and it adds to the sort of surreality of all of it. And then, you know, 70 or how many thousand fans were doing the Rangers goal song in unison. Unbelievable.
Oh, you could hear it through the broadcast. You could hear it. I mean, I know they, of course, you know, take that audio feed, but it was pretty prominent. Talk to me about the Rangers and your assessment of them thus far this season. How far will they get into the playoffs this year, do you think?
They seem to have most of the pieces. They're winning in every way possible. They're overcoming deficiencies when they don't have the best goaltending or their defense lets up this or that. They've 7 in a row now. They've won. Their best players, when they are their best players, they're pretty unbeatable. When their power play's on, unbeatable. But it seems like they're a bit fragile in terms of sustaining it. I don't know. I think there's going to be a couple of moves, pieces added. They've had some injuries. Blake Wheeler's out. So now Jimmy Vesey's on the top line with Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad. So, and Panarin's had a Hart Trophy caliber year. Mm-hmm. Vincent Trocheck not far behind. So those two on the same line. So they're motivated. They're coming off last year's 7-game loss to the Devils, coming as close as they did 2 years ago. They have the goaltender. They have Jonathan Quick backing up the goaltender. So they seem to have, but as we know, as we see, the playoffs are a completely different animal from the season itself. It's almost two different universes, and anything can happen. It's all momentum, and where you finish, it's just getting in. I don't know. It's hard to judge them against the Bruins. I haven't seen them play them that much. It's hard to judge them. Florida's very tough and very motivated as well. Carolina can't be discounted. Mm-mm. But, and then there's always the team that rises up from the 7th or 8th seed. So
yes,
the pressure's always on the Rangers to do well. They've been sitting in first place almost the whole way. The expectations will be sky high. So the pressure will be on. And then you have to get off to the good start. So they certainly have a professional coach who proved it again yesterday. I mean, that was a tremendous coaching job by Pete Laviolette at the end of that game.
Do you think he's making a difference with that, with the players?
Seems to be the perfect follow to Gerard Gallant, who got them playing at a higher level. They got a little lucky the first year by coming back against Pittsburgh and beating Carolina. I don't think fans expected the sudden going to the conference finals year. And then last year was a letdown. So I think that he's the point counterpoint. Maybe they're buying in. I mean, they're a self-led team. They're so veteran. They find it within. I think he more tweaks it. I don't think he's screaming at them and pushing them the way coaches of other championship teams may have had to in the past. I mean, I think it's Chris Kreider has been there since 2012, Mika since 2016. These guys have been through it all, and they desperately, desperately want a cup chance.
Yeah,
and years slip away, and another year goes by, and that's how it is. So immense pressure, though, because it's not easy to be the first place team going in, as we've seen so many times in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's almost like a curse, you know.
And if you lose the first game, it's uh-oh. If you lose the first two, it's oh no. And it doesn't take much to spin it and be playing for your life. So it'll start first minute of first game. and they'll be hosting, it would appear, most likely. And yeah, but it's all about who they're going to play in round two and three, and you know, how is it once you get past the always most difficult first round, as we've seen, that is the toughest round. Yeah. By far, all teams are healthy. They're all in. They're desperate. It's almost worse to lose in the first round than not make the playoffs at all.
Exactly. You
push you so might hard as well just and then
not get there. Yeah.
And then, you know, teams that are out of it and they're not expecting. But when you get in and then you're out, now what? And that, yeah, that's a factor. So
the dogs are still barking. So I'm nodding along and listening to you, and I just keep muting myself because I don't know what's going on.
They're ready for the playoffs. They're anxious for the playoffs.
Yeah, seriously. My dog hates it when I watch hockey. He hates it because I yell and he gets scared and he thinks something's wrong and he like has to go into the other room. But give me your
sound from other places. Yeah.
Right. Give me your thoughts on Devils and Flyers real quick, and then we can talk about your book.
Okay. The Devils are intriguing. They're coming off, of course, the fabulous renaissance year last year. 44-point, I think, difference from the year before. I mean, tremendous progress they made. And then beat the Rangers first round. No one would have predicted that. Young team. Jack Hughes, superstar in the making. Jesper Bratt, maybe the best underrated, under-the-radar star. Their weakness is something of the goaltending. That's the unknown variable with them. They miss a couple of guys, though, from last year who made big differences this year. They miss Ryan Graves, who signed with Pittsburgh. They miss a guy like Thomas Tatar. So they've had a little bit of hiccups along the way, but they're hanging in. They're in striking distance from wildcard spot number two. Mm-hmm. They showed them that was one of their better games of the season against the Flyers. So I don't see why they can't. They don't squander leads like the Islanders do. Somehow they're a little more cohesive. They've had their ups and downs there where you think, they're going to spiral. And yet then they come back and play three good games in four. So, and they have another professional coach in Lindy Ruff. I would expect them to hang close to that last spot. The Detroit looks playoff worthy, but they're another team that came in with reasonable expectations that may be exceeding them. So, how fragile will they be down the stretch? It looks like, though, five teams basically chasing one spot in the East. And they still have discount. Pittsburgh and Washington are down there, but could rally. So it comes down to Detroit and Philly, of course, exceeding expectations dramatically.
Yeah, sitting in another third team this season we did not, I don't think most people thought would be where they're at this point in the season.
And that's a torch-led. Of course, that the Flyers redid their front office and Keith Jones and Daniel Briere as GM. So they brought in a whole new energy. Torts has this team playing really well. They're looking strong. I don't think they'll fade. They'll probably sit right where they are in third. So that sets up something like a Carolina Flyers first round, or if the Rangers somehow can't hold on to first, the Rangers Flyers first round. That'd be wild. It's been a long time since those two played in the playoffs. So it doesn't usually, the playoff slots stay relatively close to what they are by this time of the season. So it takes a lot to fall out of it. But I would say the Devils have somewhat under exceeded so far, but still very close in. Flyers surprise, but should be a force. Torts won't let them off the hook.
No,
definitely. And they're not missing many beats. They're a deep team. They have a big defense, mobile, have some scoring from new guys. So interesting team. Tippett's been a revelation. Travis Konechny, stars. Couturier, the new captain. They have the pieces and no reason why. They've, even with Carter Hart not being on the team, the goaltending's been pretty okay without him. And interesting. I don't think the Flyers were not on the preseason radar in top three in a division. So
you've covered this league from all ends for like 20 plus years. You've been in locker room. You're in locker rooms. You're talking to players. You've heard endless amounts of press conferences and things, but give me your favorite story with any NHL player at any point in your career that we might not know.
It's a good question. It's a really good question. Well, I have some from spending time with alumni. When you talk to players years later, different situation in their lives, and you get to some stories you may not have ever heard or they never told. And they're, as players, at least stars in general, any professional athlete, when they leave the game, it's all about relevance, and you're suddenly not in the limelight. So the guys who choose to come back, the guys that are around the team, I spent a lot of time with Adam Graves through the years with the Rangers. He's such a community-minded person, so you get more insight over time for what makes these players tick. He's a tremendous one. Roger Hilbert, the ultimate Mr. Ranger. I once spent a game night in 2017 just walking around Madison Square Garden during a game with him, visiting the suites, talking to the Zamboni drivers, meeting random fans, stopping for little kids to sign. And it's just this like Pied Piper effect of he's still at age 75, and just the energy of all that was tremendous. It's such a memorable way to view the game experience through the eyes of a legend. So that type of human experience, really, really fun, stays with you forever. It, you know, you kind of the randomness of who we might meet. So, and he's in his element in the building, and number seven is so intricate, tied to the Rangers forever. He passed just, 2 years ago, and it's still a sort of tremendous void. So having had that experience to share with him and then share with the readers of my work is pretty amazing to the 8-year-old me to have had that chance. And I have similar experiences with Islander alumni. I'm very sort of connected, tied to the history, and I like to bring the past into the present and vice versa, because when you talk to the current players, it's almost always about the game, and you don't get to get deeply into the real stuff too much, here and there a little, but still it's a little bit at an arm's length. One of the more fun assignments I had for the New York Times was they asked me to do an article about players and their dogs 1 year. And I had this idea, like, especially for the Islander guys, they have more space, they have green, they have hockey players and their dogs is a major thing, and players train with them in the winter, summer.
Oh, yeah.
They love their dogs, and when they come home late from a game, the dog's waiting for them more than their family even. So it's a major part of their lives. So I thought, well, that'd be kind of cool to talk to them about. So I spent a day with a couple of Islanders and their dogs' wives
Love
at a dog park, and it's still one of the more memorable bits. And they also gave me the excuse, then the reason, to talk to everybody on the team about their dogs. And something like 18 of the 20 guys had a dog. One had a cat,
Oh
one
my God.
cat in the mix. So Thomas Hickey had the black cat. So it was like a
Love
funny way to go beyond. I'm not asking them why they're not scoring the power play. I'm asking, how's the puppy doing? And bulldogs, sheepdogs, Bernedoodles, you name it. There's a John Tavares had a Bernedoodle puppy and was telling me all about it. So these are things that, and they remember that you talk to them about this stuff, and you
Yes.
have a sense and an awareness of more than just the game, and they
Right, and that
almost
they're a person and
welcome
they're a
that.
human and that you
And
care
it's
about those things and can connect with them. So then when you go to ask them questions like, hey, what
right.
have you been not do, how can you improve your penalty kill on the aisles?
Yep.
They're going to be a little more inclined to maybe give you an
Yep.
answer as opposed to
It's
not.
completely true. And I've tried hard over my career to carve the relationship in any way I can. It's a
Yeah.
little trickier in the modern age because of limited time, and younger players are more used to social media than the one-on-one. It's got a different dynamic. But over the years, everyone is just human. They're just superior athletes who are playing a game, but in the end it's just a conversation, and there's not it, and we're united by the game, so it's easy enough to find. I just look hard for interesting backstories about their hometowns, their families, their work ethic, a school they went to, some experience that you can ask them about to prove you did your homework
Yeah.
on a first conversation, that you're not just coming in asking some random thing just to get an effect, a quote for effect on Twitter or something. Like, it's beyond that. So to me, the thoughtful question is far more important than any question, and I'd rather ask no question than the wrong question. So I try to think ahead
As
of
you know,
time and
when
connect.
As you know, when you're in the locker room with John Tortorella, you got to ask the right question. And sometimes the question is not asking a question.
Right.
Reading the room, same thing with the players, and knowing that player and their personality can shape how you ask a question or how you bring up something that you have to ask about, like an injury, but you need to do it in a roundabout way where they're not going to be pissed off at you for asking the
you
know, such a blunt question. But it's fascinating to hear. We could talk to you for a long time and hear more stories, but you're working on a really important story that's going to be in the shape of a book. Give us a little preview of what you're working on.
The book is a memoir with an all-time great who not only won a gold medal in 1980 at Lake Placid with the famed U.S. Olympic team, but then went on to win four Stanley Cups for the Islanders in sequence. Ken Morrow, a defenseman, tremendous guy, a fabulous work ethic, life of dedication, perseverance, tenacity, all those words you attach, but he's lived it. He's lived it from day one. The 1980 Olympic team, of course, lives forever in its singularity as a team that did something unbelievable, which seems to just grow with time. Somehow it resonates even more. You know, it's almost 45 years after the fact, and it's such a standalone to beating the Soviet team, and that was college kids beating a professional team. And he was this quiet defenseman who just did his job day in and day out, day in and day out, and joins the Islanders late season, seamlessly fits into their lineup, helps them win the Stanley Cup. And I've always been fascinated by that group of players just on the Islanders side. There were 16 players that won all four cups. Think of that, how unbelievable.
Unreal.
That is, in an era when teams actually stayed together, it wasn't anywhere near a salary cap, and just money was not anywhere near the money today. And they had their challenges of contracts, but it just, there was no thought of so-and-so's going because we can't afford them. It just stayed together. And
we could
and all
never
these guys
have
did
seen
win.
Players win four cups
no.
on one you, team in our, that's why we're so blown away with people like Pat Maroon, who had what, three back-to-back on different
to
teams?
Win three.
That's, you know, or
so,
not a back, one, 2 years back to back.
Two with Tampa and then one more with the Blues. So, but I mean, these guys, I think somehow that adds to the mystique of their stories. Now, sometimes waiting years to tell the stories is almost more effective than telling them 10 years after the fact. Now it's 40 something years after. So he has this amazing duality of the gold medal and the Stanley Cups, both. He's the only player to do it in the same year, obviously, and he's the only Olympian to go to the Islanders. The only Olympian that also won a Stanley Cup was Neil Broughton, but did that 15 years later with the Devils as a role player in 1995. So Neil Broughton's the only player to actually win three. Then he wins the NCAA title as well with Minnesota and Herb Brooks. So also Kenny Morrow has the double of playing for Herb Brooks and Al Arbor, two absolute legendary coaches.
Wow.
And he played in college at Bowling Green for Ron Mason, a third legend. So once you kind of get into the life stories, I feel like the book is very, as much a sort of everyman story of how hard work and dedication and being focused and doing your job. Anyone can relate to that in any field.
Yep.
And he's also a quiet guy who didn't talk a lot as a player. So to hear his story in a book form is kind of neat, because he wasn't one to share a whole lot as a player. And apparently, from what I was learned in the course of doing the project, the Olympic element, the stories of those guys and that team, people and fans of that era can't get enough of it. And I had a tremendous bond to that as a kid. So
I think even kids
very
today
neat
have
to
a
tell.
Tremendous bond to that movie. That movie, right?
The movie.
There you go.
The movie brought it back.
The generation difference, right, is like that movie, but for you that's real life, you know, and the movie has resonated. And then when, you know,
it's part of the beauty of it. New generations appreciate something you doesn't always happen that way. And even when they won, they thought, oh, 10 years, you know, we'll do a couple of reunions, and in 10 years no one will really talk about it as much. And just the opposite. And it's the same with the Islander legends as well. Those guys,
yeah,
the fan base, of course, they haven't won the cup since 83, but
what they accomplished in that time
is so singular.
Yeah.
And unmatched, 19 straight series wins. And, you know, so there's something with the legacy story of a group that won at that level. And, you know, of course, there's real life that intercedes. Clark Gillies, Mike Bossy passing a couple of years. It's shocking when you see them go, and in your mind's eye, everyone's 28 forever. So,
yep.
It's hard.
Including yourself, right, Alan?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. It's like something happens.
28.
Yeah.
So there's a value in telling the stories now and not waiting 20 more years.
It's going to be the sequel to Miracle on Ice, your book.
It will.
You're going to write
it
the
will.
Book, and then you're going to sell the rights to Hollywood.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's going to be the Ken Morrow story.
I like it. Good thinking.
They're targeting it for you.
For the 45th anniversary next February, which
awesome
is just a stunning. It's also the 45th anniversary of the Islanders winning the Cup. So,
the Islanders are going to be real busy too, because they're going to be hosting the All-Star
they
game.
Are. That was announced yesterday. All-Star Game 2026, lead in to the Olympic Games in Italy. Mm-hmm. So they pitching it apparently as some sort of launch effort into the Olympics. Because I sense it won't be every Olympian won't be available for this All-Star weekend.
Right.
So there'll be some interesting ramifications on how they do it, but it's in a brand new arena. It's in New York. It hasn't been in New York since the 80s. Well, actually the Rangers did one in the Garden in 94. So in 30 years though. So and the Islanders hosted one in 83, Devils in 84. So it's been a while, and why not? And, you know, suddenly we're talking about 2026. Like,
I know.
The slowdown.
We just
time,
started right? 2024, and we're both 28, Alan. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Let's not. We're regressing in time. So 28 is the number forever. Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan, for taking the time to share all your insights and chat with me the day after you just watched back-to-back outdoor games and are still probably warming up and getting your legs and your brain back together after experiencing two gigantic legendary games in this career. So thank you. I will link in our show notes where people can follow you on Twitter so they can keep up with you and the progress on the book. And if they go to, you cover all three teams, so fans of Islanders, Rangers, Devils, look for Alan at warm-ups. You'll see him there. He's always down.
Warm-ups.
Go say hi to Alan and tell him you heard him on the podcast and talk hockey with him.
I noticed the Blackhawks jersey, and here we are. So
Exactly. I was just standing there watching my boys warm up, and Alan was there.
The key to warm-ups is watching the visiting team because it's a little less crowded, and you tend to meet interesting new people, and fans are enthusiastic to see their team visit New York. So,
thank you, Alan. I will let you get back to work. And, Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Thanks for coming over to our House of Hockey podcast and hanging out with us. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Just look for House of Hockey podcast. We'll be back next week.